So I guess we can start with a little bit of follow-up from last week on the Meltdown and Spectre fiasco that's been going on. I did discover after we recorded that how we talked about how NVIDIA was affected by it and they were pushing out updates. Come to find out, they released another statement saying that they were only really pushing out the updates as sort of a preliminary protection kind of thing. It's not that they were... I don't really think they're 100% immune, but I think they're more immune than a lot of other processors out there. So just wanted to give that correction about NVIDIA. So NVIDIA seems to be your self-driving autonomous vehicle AI is going to be okay for right now.
Oh, okay. I thought that patch was only for their they were only pushing it out for GPUs. I didn't know they were talking about their ARM processors too.
Well, that may be different than what I read, but I did post an article at the bottom of the show notes.
That's
it
cool.
Had updated in the title, so it looks like NVIDIA might be okay, but
that's
but
awesome.
Have you noticed any of more of your machines having issues? I know you had those 12 or whatever, they got hosed, but have you noticed any kind of slowdowns happening in your stuff?
Actually, yes. I've had a couple of users report that they've noticed that things are running slower, and it's on those exact specifications that they said were going to be more noticeable. Second generation core processors running Windows 7, which I actually have quite a bit of machines out here that are in that range. So, I mean, the only way to really fix it is to just go ahead and finish deploying Windows 10 to all those machines, avoid my policy that I've had when I've just been doing it on new machines, and just bite the bullet and do the school enrollment and move on with life.
Yeah, that's sort of been my way of doing the upgrade, too. As anything that gets wiped out or anything that gets purchased gets Windows 10 on it. I've really only had one teacher kind of mention to me that things have gotten kind of slow, but I can't 100% pinpoint it as it's because of this, or if it's because she's trying to open a smart notebook file with 200-plus slides on it from her home directory over Wi-Fi. So, I mean, there's a lot of factors happening in her situation that may be slowing it down. So
I think I know what the problem is. First off, don't make smart notebooks that are 300 pages long. I mean, that's a little much.
Yeah, that's what I told her. I said, smart notebook's a pretty resource-intensive application already, and so when you're going to have a document that's got 200-plus slides on it that you're opening from the network over Wi-Fi, yeah, your machine's probably going to choke down a little bit.
Oh, yeah, and then you're probably going to get the call when that thing corrupts because it saved back part of it and not all of it.
Well, I kind of gave her some hints or some suggestions. I was like, hey, you can move the whole thing to the local computer while you're on Wi-Fi. This is because we're all displaced. This isn't her normal computer. So, and where she's at, I don't really have a network for her, so she's using one of these little tiny Dell computers that we had for our college application room where kids can go fill out college applications because they were Wi-Fi.
Oh, so it's already the creme de la creme.
Yeah, so it's a very high-end machine that she's already on. And so I kind of suggested to her move it to the local storage and open it that way. And she might want to think about breaking it up into different notebook files. So I hope that she and I told her, too, it's like if you save it locally, if you make changes pretty regular to it, just once a week or so, just copy it back over to your home directory and override it so that you know that you always have the latest version there. So, and I haven't really, she told me she was going to do some of that, and I haven't really heard any complaining anymore about, or she hasn't mentioned anything about the slowness of it. But then again, we haven't been here for 2 days because
this is true.
Apparently, when it gets cold, Texas shuts down because we don't know how to live in the extreme cold weather. So,
I know we had, and Monday was Martin Luther King Day, and then Tuesday and Wednesday were Southeast Texas is frozen day.
Yeah, I saw this meme going around on Twitter. It was like a map of the United States, and then Texas was white and said closed on it.
Yes. But you know what? I think I already mentioned this to you once, but this is the first time on recorded weather history that our area has had 3 snowfalls in a single year.
It's been a crazy year between this historic flooding that we had and now 3 instances of snow. And it's like probably a day or two before the first snow happened, I told my kid, look, you're probably never going to see snow. And he's got to see it like 3 times this year. It's kind of amazing.
Daddy's a liar.
Yeah, and Dad lies. But yeah, it's been an interesting week. We actually had to come to school Monday as a hurricane makeup day because we had to miss. I think we missed more than you did, so we had to kind of make that day up as an instruction day, but then Tuesday and Wednesday were kind of, it was cold, so we all just stayed home, tried to stay warm.
It wasn't the cold that got it. I mean, we're just cold enough to where things freeze and collect on each other, and then it warms up just enough to make it all stick to each other and then freezes again. So we're susceptible to black ice in our area when it does get this cold. We don't get the nice, pretty, soft snow like everybody else in the country does. We get ice.
Yes, and there was actually, in the biggest town that we have closest to us, Beaumont, there was actually like an 8-car wreck on one of the bridges. And
yes.
I think a lot of it had to do with the ice. So, and that's kind of the reason why school gets canceled down here. It's almost the opposite of like New York. Everybody in New York freaks out when it gets real hot just because they're not used to like living in it. Yeah, they don't have air conditioning. Well, when things get real cold down here in like the 20s, people up north probably think, well, that's nothing. I mean, why is Texas freaking out in the 20s? Well, like you said, we don't deal with snow, we deal with ice, and ice on roads is dangerous. And so it's just it was a safety measure. And granted, it didn't happen until later in the day on Wednesday, but all of it would have started happening. The rain was falling and it started to freeze around like a little after lunchtime or whatever. So it would have been a little bit unsafe to get the kids home, and so that's why they went ahead and just called the day and then followed up with calling it on Wednesday too.
Yeah, my security cameras at the house actually have some really cool footage of all the snow coming down, because we actually had snowflakes about the size of dollar coins coming down at our house for a long time. And there's a real interesting video of me trying to ice skate in boots.
I'm sure that went really well.
Yeah, it wasn't too hot.
You a little sore? Got a bruise?
My shoulder's been hurting for the next past day because it did catch me.
Well, I guess we can talk. We haven't really been in school most of the week, I guess, but we still do have a little bit of technology news. It looks like Firefox is. We talked last week about Chrome's ADMX file for Google policy for managing Google Chrome with Active Directory and Group Policy. It looks like Firefox is finally going to allow us to do some policy management for Firefox. Now, they're not doing it with the ADMX file like Chrome does, but at least it's a start and it's something.
Yeah, I expect. Well, you know, Firefox actually does have a third-party ADMX you can download and integrate into Active Directory. But I imagine we're going to get a lot more functionality coming soon because they're actually going to have real policy engine now. I'm completely stoked about this because we're going to have policy engine in Firefox, and third parties are going to be able to build whatever they want with it to manage things, and it's cool. I'm totally excited about it, and I can't believe it took them this long.
I do remember that Firefox had that third-party one, but I never could get it to work, so that's probably why I forget about it.
Yeah, I have it installed in my directory, but I don't really use it because it doesn't work all the time.
The only thing that I've really had to manage with Firefox is because I do SSL decryption with my filter, Firefox likes to do certificate stores completely different from the rest of the world, and so they kind of do their own certificate store, which might drop down some of the memory usage if they would just use the one that's built into Windows.
Hey,
and so I have
back
to
back on up off of there. They're better than Chrome now about memory usage.
That is true. Chrome's becoming the new Internet Explorer 6. So I actually have a script that to push out this certificate, I basically imported it into a Firefox install, ripped out the three files that you need for the certificate store, and then on like login, I checked to see if a user has a Firefox profile or finds the default profile for the Firefox user, and if it finds it, I copy those three files into it, and if it doesn't find it, it just errors out and just goes about its business. And so I've kind of had to cheat to be able to push out my certificate to for my filter to be able to do the SSL decryption. And I've actually shared that method with iBoss and some other school districts as kind of a cheater way, because iBoss really didn't have a solution, and this is what I came up with, and so I shared it with them. So I don't know if they've told other customers or other clients that this is kind of a cheater way to do it.
It'd be interesting to see if it made it into their knowledge base. We should check.
But I'm just glad that, I mean, right now it's just copying JSON files from computer to computer, so it's essentially what I'm doing anyway for the certificate store, but it's a start, and it's something that Firefox is building in. And like you said, yeah. once the policy engine is there, and since Firefox is kind of open source, that's going to allow other people to build third-party tools, and maybe we might actually get a working ADMX plugin for group policy to actually be able
really
to control
neat
Firefox.
Because actually, the Firefox that's in our district is the ESR releases, the extended support releases. Because I just get tired of hearing complaining about things moving around all the time. I'll be quite honest. That's why it's on the ESR, because I don't want to hear about a menu item moving.
Well, I mean, you know, with our finance and student information system, it's like this vendor has, like, pounded it into everybody's head for years. You have to use Firefox, you have to use Firefox, you have to use Firefox. And not only do you have to use Firefox, it's like you have to use a certain version of Firefox. It, sometimes it'll work on this version of Firefox, but it may not work on the next version of Firefox. And so, but now that the application finally supports Chrome, to be completely honest with you, I really don't even install Firefox unless it's specifically asked for, or if it's like somebody that I know may actually need it.
Well, on this particular application that you're talking about, I actually have to have both of them installed at our administration offices, because on checks, when you're picking vendors on checks, if you have two vendors of the same name, which a lot of the time you do, one for returns, one for orders, and, well, in one browser, Chrome, it shows the names correctly in the right order, but it doesn't show the addresses. And then in Firefox, it shows the addresses, but not the complete name. So, yeah, you have to have both of them open if you're doing checks to make it work.
I've actually had that kind of problem in more than just checks. I know the counselor has an issue where she's trying to do something with like scheduling or whatever, and it's like the information shows up in Firefox one way and the information shows up in Chrome a completely different way. And it's like, why? Why is it doing this? I mean, it's just crazy. But now that we get a policy engine and Firefox is actually getting good as far as memory management and stuff like that, it might be time to start rolling that out again to my users and maybe encourage them to use that instead of Chrome.
Yeah, I mean, I switched to Firefox on my personal stuff a couple weeks ago now, and actually I've been very happy with it. I've only ran into a couple of issues, and the issues weren't really Firefox. It was the website. It was doing some things that just aren't good, like on an HTTPS site presenting some of the content over HTTP not encrypted. So it complained about those things. But I've always liked the developer tools in Firefox far more than in Chrome.
There's a lot of browsers are starting to gripe about that now. Whenever you have an HTTPS site and you start throwing, if it tries to load content that's over HTTP, there's a lot of browsers. Well, I know Chrome is, and I know in Firefox they're all getting kind of angry about that. They're pushing for the HTTPS everywhere, and which when it comes to school districts is, I mean, HTTPS is a great thing, but when it comes to trying to filter students, it's not such a great thing, and so it's just one of those ongoing battles.
We're going down that wonderful path with iBoss right now. I'm slowly pushing it out and seeing what all tears up, because I've heard your experiences with Google Apps. So I'm kind of wary about it, but I just kind of need to do it.
Yeah, and it's actually got some cool things. You can actually tell what they're searching for on like YouTube now, which is kind of, I mean, it's got some cool things. When it works, it's great, but when it breaks, oh, it's miserable.
and it's only at lunchtime every day, right?
Yeah, it was so weird. Every day at lunchtime it would always break. It was like some box wherever they had the American Airlines box or whatever that they were using to hijack DNS requests would always reboot or something.
You can't say American Airlines and hijack in the same sentence. You're going to get the FBI on this podcast.
Probably, but that's what they were doing. They were DNS poisoning and taking over and sending requests for Google out to this box that they owned, and that box would keep going down. I don't know if it's because it was getting DDoSed or if it was just too much traffic for it or what, but I mean, it was every day at lunchtime. But they did something in the back end of mine, and I tried to remember where they did it so I could tell you where to do it, but I think they did it in a location that we actually can't get to. But ever since they did that, I haven't really had any issues.
Yeah, and they really don't want you in that box. I mean, I've done everything but boot the thing up in single user mode to get access to everything.
Yeah, I keep asking for things that they're like, no, we don't have a way to do that. I'm like, I just want to export my block and allow list. I can import them, man. But I can't export them. I just want to go through them and clean them up in a nice, easy way with like Excel, with some automation tools, and be able to sort and be able to search and replace.
I had some JavaScript code you could post into the developer console or browser, and I got it all, but I got a lot of other stuff too in the list, and it was kind of miserable to clean up, so I didn't give it to you.
I just kind of gave up on the whole project because I was like, I'll just run with it. I'll start over next time I get a new filter because it's almost time for a new filter anyway, right? 3 years?
Yes, it is. We're at the third year. But I am looking.
But just a kind of a hint about the SSL decryption, only do the selective SSL decryption. Only decrypt like what you really want to decrypt, and mostly that's Google stuff. And so, but there has been some instances you may find that you're trying to go to a web page and all of a sudden you'll get like this HTTPS SSL error and you're like, what is going on? And if you throw it into the selective list or whatever, it'll take it. And it's just kind of crazy how it works. I mean,
and how it doesn't.
Yeah, and how it doesn't. But when it does work, it's great. But when it doesn't, it's miserable.
And I'm only going to be doing it on our student networks, so they can have a miserable experience. That's okay.
Don't do it on your bring your own device network. Don't do it there.
I am. That's the network I'm doing it on, and I've got instructions already written up on how they can import the root authority, and if they don't, I'm sorry. It's just not going to work for you.
Well, actually, you can get away with it easier because you can get a certificate from anywhere.
Yes, I can.
It's like I can't do things like that because my domain.
But just because I can get the certificate, I can't get a root authority certificate.
Oh, that's true.
But so, the instructions are really easy. I mean, it's only two clicks on Android and iOS, and so, I mean, yeah, they can get over it. They can add this or not use it. That's fine.
Yeah, maybe I ought to look into actually doing that. I don't really care enough about the student networks.
Well, I mean, that's the one that I got the most problems on.
Oh, I got you. I got mine. It's throttled so down that kids, I think, really only use it for things that they're supposed to because it's not an enjoyable experience to use.
I did show some mercy and increase the bandwidth from 1 meg per login to 3, so they at least get 3 megabit now.
I do that, and then with my iBoss, I do the bandwidth shaping or whatever for that network, and so it's like 200 students or whatever connect to it. They all get a maximum of 3 megs or whatever from the wireless controller, but then the iBoss keeps the whole network at like 40 megs. I'm pretty mean to it when it comes to it.
Oh, man, and that's sad when you stop to think about it. What do you have at your house now? 120 meg down?
Here I am giving them 40. But I did increase that to 50, so I gave them a little bit more. So.
Yeah, but I think I'm going to go down that path in spring if we can stay in school long enough for me to finish a project.
But It's not really that hard, especially when it comes to Windows machines pushing out the certificate. You know, it's real easy.
It's actually already been in there all year for my Windows machines.
Same for Chromebooks. It's pretty easy to get to.
It's actually been in there all year, too, for those.
So
only thing that I haven't done anything for was that open network for people. And, I'm only going to do it to the students. I'm not going to do it to the staff. I don't want someone coming back saying I saw their bank login.
Yeah, and that's kind of one of the reasons why I'm not doing it. For one, two, I've got this whole thing, and I'm probably wrong in thinking this. I mean, because they're using their device on my network, but I don't really want something from my network on their device.
No,
you know, I don't really want to run the risk somewhere down the line, this certificate that I push out to their device cause something for them to break when they're not at school. You know what I mean? And right now, there's really no way that it could, but you never know. Apple's full of bugs recently, so I mean, don't even text me. I know you want to, so don't even text me. Don't send me the URL.
Oh no! I was actually going to have some good news for Apple. In the next version of iOS, they're going to give you the option to disable the battery slowdown.
Hey, I did see that, and so it's almost
I commend you, Apple. I commend you. Do that the first time, though.
Yeah, I know. That's the whole big thing. It's like, hey, it's great that you found a fix for it and your fix makes sense, but give us the option to turn it off. Like, let me turn it on. Let it turn on with the low power mode setting.
Yeah, that
like
makes
when
a lot
your battery
sense.
Gets down to 20 or 30%, turn on low power mode and then it'll do that throttling, which it sort of already does with the low power mode. But when it's above that, let it be full power. I mean, that just, I don't know why they just didn't make that completely a part of the low power setting, but it's just things we don't understand. But going back to that iMessage bug or whatever, I did throw that in my block list.
Oh, come on.
As soon as I read that news article, I was like, I'm going to block that website.
Aww.
So I took that one page from GitHub away, so they can't access that, so we won't have phones crashing in the middle of the day and people freaking out.
What you
out.
Need to do is on your student network, go ahead and set up a time server in December 31st, 1969.
Just let the world crater. Or what I could do for the student Wi-Fi, put in a like a web portal that brings them to that crashing URL every time they connect.
Hey,
we're
you
terrible.
Know what?
We're terrible to kids. I mean, we're
April
just
Fool's
terrible.
Day is coming up.
Yeah, that's. It's going to be a weird April Fool's Day because it's also Easter this year. It's going to be kind of interesting.
Ooh.
So it's Easter and April Fool's Day all on the same day. So
let's hope he wasn't kidding.
Yeah. So I guess we'll have to play our tricks on the second for telling the kids or whatever. Just take the Wi-Fi away. Some kid actually did say that Star Wars was the worst movie ever made on Monday, so I said, that's fine. I'll take your Wi-Fi away. He was like, never mind. Star Wars is the best.
Well, depending on which one, I might agree with him.
It's like, well, I'll give you the prequels as being terrible. But
anything with Jar Jar in it, I'm sorry.
But come on, Empire Strikes Back? I mean, come on, that's like the best movie ever.
That is awesome. That one was my favorite always.
That's the one movie that breaks the whole mold that the sequel is not ever as good as the first one. And it's
that's because
like,
he actually had money to make that one.
It was so much better than the first one. But
I still haven't got to see the new one, though.
You need to, so I can send you this GIF that I want to send you. But I don't want to send you the GIF and ruin the movie.
You might as well, because last time I did manage to not read anything about it for a year before I saw it. And I still haven't read anything about Rogue One, and I hadn't finished it. I'm like 10 minutes in. I hadn't even seen Vader yet. I started it like a year ago.
That's funny. You just need to sit down and do it.
I need
quit,
some time alone.
Turn the video games off and watch Star Wars.
Well, I already do have them turned off right now because I feel guilty about playing them.
Yeah, so because it interrupts your mining?
It does interrupt my mining, and I feel guilty. I feel like I'm losing money now when I play Fallout.
Well, then don't play Fallout. Just watch Star Wars. It'll make everything better.
There you go.
But I do want to jump back to the Meltdown Spectre thing one more time. I did read an article that said our SANs, the storage that we have on site, our storage area networks, they are actually okay. Well, at least Dell is saying theirs is okay, and that's what I have. And it's because they kind of preface it at the end of it. Preface, wouldn't that be like the epilogue? I don't know. It's a preface is before. So they said afterwards, after they kind of said what was going on, they said, well, this really only works if you kind of just do the recommended settings, recommended stuff. So as long as you're not doing anything crazy, you'll be okay. And the reason why SANs and hyper-converged systems are okay is because the way that the operating system that it has running, it doesn't really allow like code that's not its to be run on the device. And so, yes, the bug is probably there, but there's really no way to make the bug happen. There's really no way to get that unencrypted data because you're not really allowed to run anything other than the
code anyway.
Yeah, anything other than its normal code, you can't run it on there. And so that's kind of why it's safe, which is a good thing because heaven help us if our storage slows down. So because that could be bad.
It's oversubscribed already, man, so that would be real bad news. But I do see have some more Spectre news. I mean, you know, remember how we were talking about how those AMD systems were bricked?
Yes.
Whatnot. Well, boot looped. Well, Microsoft does have that patch fixed, so it doesn't cause that issue anymore. But Intel's got some more bad news.
Intel's full of bad news.
Oh, man. Poor Intel. Well, the microcode update that they pushed out, which good luck getting a user to install that, but it was causing reboot issues on what was it, Haswell and Broadwell processors. So a couple generations back, well, now that microcode turns out to not only affect those generations, but also Ivy Bridge, Sandy Bridge, Skylake, and Kaby Lake. So every generation of the core architecture is affected by the microcode reboot problem.
Yeah, great. I did see where Intel said, look, we know this is a problem, and we're going to keep working on it. It's almost like they're going to keep releasing versions of this to try to make it better.
Which is great.
As things go on.
For it.
So, but there is a tool from our friend and yours, Steve Gibson, from the GRC.com website, makers of Spinrite. He actually released a tool that lets you check your system, and it's Windows only, lets you check your system to see if you're affected by Spectre or Meltdown. And supposedly the tool even gives you buttons to be able to disable the protection that the patch put in. Apparently it's just a registry setting that Microsoft pushed out. And so apparently this tool that Steve Gibson made can actually disable those protections to give you your system performance back, but still allowing the Microsoft patch to install, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you have to catch it before the patch installs. But it's called Inspector.
Yeah, so that's kind of interesting. If you want to see how your system's going to be affected or if at all, we'll throw a link in the show notes to that. Well, Windows.
I wonder if
machines.
He wrote that in assembly too, because you know he writes like everything in assembly.
I wonder if he's still running Windows XP.
No, he did upgrade to 7 a couple years ago.
I quit listening to his podcast because I couldn't stand his co-host. But hey, and you know, speaking of, he is actually suing Twitter.
I'm sorry, Leo. You don't get to sue people because they say the word tweet.
Or twit. And it's because Twitter is like expanding into video. And apparently there was this handshake agreement between him and Evan Williams that said, hey, we know there's kind of like a trademark thing going on between twit and Twitter. But as long as you stay out of video, everything's cool. And for a while, it was like, yeah, that's fine. We'll stay out of video. Now they're getting into video, and so now Leo Laporte's throwing a big old hissy fit.
So we already know where this is going to go.
Well,
you do too, Leo.
I could tell you where I hope it would go, but I don't want to get political on this podcast.
it can go to Eastern California, right?
Well, if there's one man, that
Western
needs to be,
California.
If there's one dude that needs to be taken down by the Me Too movement in technology, it would be Leo Laporte, and that's really all I want to say about it.
Well, never mind. I don't have anything nice to say, so I can't.
I guess that could be our show this week. Like I said, we were out for 3 days, or you were out for 3 days. We were out for two, so not a whole lot's going on. I am able to get some quotes on some interactive TVs for our portables. So
that's awesome. Which ones are you going to end up going with?
Well, we're probably going to go with the hover cams because they're cheap.
Okay. Let me know how they work, because I have one of, I can't even remember the name of the company now. That'll come to me after we hit stop.
But I actually, because I have those two Boxlight Pro Colors or whatever, and one of them actually went into a Android update boot mishap where it was trying
inspectored?
To no maybe well it was trying to do an upgrade, and well, there's no wireless in it, and I didn't have the network port plugged into it, and so I was like, why are you trying to update? And so I reached out to our vendor, and he put me in touch with the support, and he's like, they're not supposed to do an auto update thing. And so he more or less called it a fluke is what happened to it. And he's basically just, if you pull the power and plug it back in, does it go back to normal? Yes. That's like, well, okay. And that's sort of the end of the tech support thing.
Oh, okay. Oh, InFocus, JTouch.
Oh, InFocus. Yeah.
Yeah. That was the ones I have.
I think we're going to get a quote for some hover cams for those portables, because like you said, we could put our smart boards and stuff in there, but every time they close the door, they're going to have to recalibrate.
So. Yeah.
It's going to be a pain for the teachers, and it's not going to be very it's not going to help with the workflow. It's not going to be very efficient to have to stop what you're doing and recalibrate if you're trying to use the thing. So.
Especially if you're one of those teachers that's moved to like 60-point calibration.
Yeah, and so. But, you know, they're going to be permanent classrooms anyway, and so no matter where they go or whoever's going to be in there, it's going to be a problem if we put a smart board and a projector in there.
Yeah,
so we might as well just solve the problem now and put the interactive display and not have to worry about the calibration problem.
Oh man, those things, I love those things so much, and I want to buy one for every classroom, but I've already got to come up with $40,000 for the one-to-one this year that doesn't have any additional funding.
Well, you'll find a way to do it. You kind of have to.
I could buy up some GPUs and sell them, right?
Yeah, that's what you're doing right now, isn't it?
Oh, no comment.
But yeah, that's our show this week. If you want to reach out to us, Chris is at Feeks on Twitter, and I'm at Twist of Matt. You can reach out to the show at Educating Tech, or visit educatingtech.net for links to subscribe or for past episodes. So that's it for our short week. We'll see you later, Chris.
See you later, Matt.